Chapter 15 Lane the Depot's McIntosh's account of the Depot Lane journeys undertaken by his parties in the summer of 1915-16 unfortunately is not available. The leader of the parties kept a diary, but he had the book with him when he was lost on the sea ice in the following winter. The narrative of the journeys has been compiled from the notes kept by Joyce, Richards, and other members of the parties, and I may say here that it is a record of dogged endeavor in the face of great difficulties and serious dangers. It is always easy to be wise after the event, and one may realize now that the use of the dogs, and trained and soft from shipboard inactivity, on the comparatively short journey undertaken immediately after the landing in 1915 was a mistake. The result was the loss of nearly all the dogs before the longer and more important journeys of 1915-16 were undertaken. The men were sledging almost continuously during a period of 6 months. They suffered from frostbite, scurvy, snow blindness, and the utter weariness of overtaxed bodies. But they placed the depots in the required positions, and if the Weddell Sea Party had been able to make the crossing of the Antarctic continent, the stores and fuel would have been waiting for us where we expected to find them. The position on October 9th was that the nine men at Hut Point had with them the stores required for the depots and for their own maintenance throughout the summer. The remaining dogs were at Cape Evans with Gaze, who had a sore heel and had been replaced temporarily by Stevens in the sledging party. A small quantity of stores had been conveyed already to safety camp on the edge of the barrier beyond Hut Point. McIntosh intended to form a large depot off Minute Bluff, 70 miles out from Hut Point. This would necessitate several trips with heavy loads. Then he would use the Bluff Depot as a base for the journey to Mount Hope, at the foot of the Beardmore Glacier, where the final depot was to be laid. The party left Hut Point on the morning of October 9th, the nine men hauling on one rope and trailing three loaded sledges. They reached safety camp in the early afternoon, and, after repacking the sledges with a load of about 2,000 pounds, they began the journey over the barrier. The pulling proved exceedingly heavy, and they camped at the end of half a mile. It was decided next day to separate the sledges, three men to haul each sledge. McIntosh hoped that better progress could be made in this way. The distance for the day was only 4 miles, and the next day's journey was no better. Joyce mentions that he had never done harder pulling, the surface being soft, and the load amounting to 220 pounds per man. The new arrangement was not a success, owing to differences in hauling capacity and inequalities in the loading of the sledges, and on the morning of the 12th, McIntosh, after consultation, decided to push forward with Wild and Spencer Smith, hauling one sledge and a relatively light load, and leave Joyce and the remaining five men to bring two sledges and the rest of the stores at their best pace. This arrangement was maintained on the later journeys. The temperatures were falling below negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit at some hours, and, as the men perspired freely while hauling their heavy loads in the sun, they suffered a great deal of discomfort in the damp and freezing clothes at night. Joyce cut down his load on the 13th by depoting some rations and spare clothing, and made better progress. He was building snow cairns as guideposts for use on the return journey. He mentions passing some large crevasses during succeeding days. Persistent headwinds with occasional drift made the conditions unpleasant and caused many frostbites. When the surface was hard, and the pulling comparatively easy, the men slipped and fell continually, looking much like classical dancers. On the 20th a northerly wind made possible the use of a sail, and Joyce's party made rapid progress. Jack sighted a bamboo pole during the afternoon, and Joyce found that marked a depot he had laid for my own farthest south party in 1908. He dug down in the hope of finding some stores, but the depot had been cleared. The party reached the Bluff Depot on the evening of the 21st and found that McIntosh had been there on the 19th. McIntosh had left 178 pounds of provisions, and Joyce left one sledge and 273 pounds of stores. The most interesting incident of the return journey was the discovery of a note left by Mr. Cherry Garrard for Captain Scott on March 19, 1912. Only a few days before the latter perished at his camp farther south. An upturned sledge at this point was found to mark a depot of dog biscuit and motor oil, laid by one of Captain Scott's parties. Joyce reached safety camp on the afternoon of the 27th, and, after dumping all spare gear, pushed on to Hut Point in a blizzard. The sledges nearly went over a big drop at the edge of the barrier, and a few moments later Stevens dropped down a crevasse to the length of his harness. Had a tough job getting him up, as we had no alpine rope and had to use harness, wrote Joyce. Got over all right and had a very hard pull against wind and snow, my face getting frostbitten as I had to keep looking up to steer. We arrived at the hut about 7:30 p.m. after a very hard struggle. We found the captain and his party there. They had been in for 3 days. Gaze was also there with the dogs. We soon had a good feed and forgot our hard day's work. McIntosh decided to make use of the dogs on the second journey to the Bluff Depot. He thought that with the aid of the dogs heavier loads might be hauled. This plan involved the dispatch of a party to Cape Evans to get dog pemmican. McIntosh himself, with Wild and Spencer Smith, started south again on October 29th. Their sledge overturned on the slope down to the sea ice, and the rim of their tent spread was broken. The damage did not appear serious, and the party soon disappeared round Cape Armitage. Joyce remained in charge at Hut Point, with instructions to get dog food from Cape Evans and make a start south as soon as possible. He sent Stevens, Hayward, and Cope to Cape Evans the next day, and busied himself with the repair of sledging gear. Cope, Hayward, and Gaze arrived back from Cape Evans on November 1st, Stevens having stayed at the base. A blizzard delayed the start southward, and the party did not get away until November 5th. The men pulled in harness with the four dogs, and, as the surface was soft and the loads on the two sledges were heavy, the advance was slow. The party covered 5 miles 700 yards on the 6th, 4 miles 300 yards on the 7th, and 8 miles 1800 yards on the 9th, with the aid of a light northerly wind. They passed on the 9th a huge bergstrom, with a drop of about 70 feet from the flat surface of the barrier. Joyce thought that a big crevasse had caved in. We took some photographs, wrote Joyce. It is a really extraordinary fill-in of ice, with cliffs of blue ice about 70 feet high, and heavily crevassed, with overhanging snow curtains. One could easily walk over the edge coming from the north in thick weather. Another bergstrom, with crevassed ice around it, was encountered on the 11th. Joyce reached the Bluff Depot on the evening of the 14th and found that he could leave 624 pounds of provisions. McIntosh had been there several days earlier and had left 188 pounds of stores. Joyce made Hut Point again on November 20th after an adventurous day. The surface was good in the morning and he pushed forward rapidly. About 10:30 a.m. the party encountered heavy pressure ice with crevasses, and had many narrow escapes. After lunch we came on 4 crevasses quite suddenly. Jack fell through. We could not alter course, or else we should have been steering among them, so galloped right across. We were going so fast that the dogs that went through were jerked out. It came on very thick at 2 p.m. Every bit of land was obscured, and it was hard to steer. Decided to make for Hut Point, and arrived at 6:30 p.m., after doing 22 miles, a very good performance. I had a bad attack of snow blindness and had to use cocaine. Hayward also had a bad time. I was laid up and had to keep my eyes bandaged for 3 days. Hayward, too. The two men were about again on November 24th, and the party started south on its third journey to the Bluff on the 25th. McIntosh was some distance ahead, but the two parties met on the 28th and had some discussion as to plans. McIntosh was proceeding to the Bluff Depot with the intention of taking a load of stores to the depot placed on latitude 80 degrees south in the first season sledging. Joyce, after depositing his third load at the Bluff, would return to Hut Point for a fourth and last load, and the parties would then join forces for the journey southward to Mount Hope. Joyce left 729 pounds at the Bluff Depot on December 2nd, reached Hut Point on December 7th, and, after allowing dogs and men a good rest, he moved southward again on December 13th. This proved to be the worst journey the party had made. The men had much trouble with crevasses, and they were held up by blizzards on December 16th, 18, 19, 22, 23, 26, and 27. They spent Christmas Day struggling through soft snow against an icy wind and drift. The party reached the Bluff Depot on December 28th, and found that McIntosh, who had been much delayed by the bad weather, had gone south 2 days earlier on his way to the 80 degrees south depot. He had not made much progress and his camp was in sight. He had left instructions for Joyce to follow him. The Bluff Depot was now well stocked. Between 2,800 and 2,900 pounds of provisions had been dragged to the depot for the use of parties working to the south of this point. This quantity was in addition to stores placed there earlier in the year. Joyce left the Bluff Depot on December 29th, and the parties were together 2 days later. McIntosh handed Joyce instructions to proceed with his party to a latitude 81 degrees S and place a depot there. He was then to send three men back to Hut Point and proceed to a latitude 82 degrees south, where he would lay another depot. Then, if provisions permitted, he would push south as far as latitude 83 degrees. McIntosh himself was reinforcing the depot at latitude 80 degrees south and would then carry on southward. Apparently his instructions to Joyce were intended to guard against the contingency of the parties failing to meet. The dogs were hauling well, and though their number was small, they were of very great assistance. The parties were now 90 days out from Cape Evans, and all hands were feeling fit. The next incident of importance was the appearance of a defect in one of the two Primus lamps used by Joyce's party. The lamps had all seen service with one or other of Captain Scott's parties, and they had not been in first-class condition when the sledging commenced. The threatened failure of a lamp was a matter of grave moment, since a party could not travel without the means of melting snow and preparing hot food. If Joyce took a faulty lamp past the 80 degrees south depot, his whole party might have to turn back at latitude 81 degrees south, and this would imperil the success of the season's sledging. He decided, therefore, to send three men back from the 80 degrees south depot, which he reached on January 6, 1916. Cope, Days, and Jack were the men to return. They took the defective Primus and a light load, and by dint of hard traveling, without the aid of dogs, they reached Cape Evans on January 16. Joyce, Richards, and Hayward went forward with a load of 1280 pounds, comprising 12 weeks' sledging rations, dog food and depot supplies, in addition to the sledging gear. They built cairns at short intervals as guides to the depots. Joyce was feeding the dogs well and giving them a hot hoosh every third night. It is worth it for the wonderful amount of work they are doing. If we can keep them to 82 degrees south, I can honestly say it is through their work we have got through. On January 8th, McIntosh joined Joyce, and from that point the parties, six men strong, went forward together. They marched in thick weather during January 10th, 11th, and 12th, keeping the course by means of cairns, with a scrap of black cloth on top of each one. It was possible, by keeping the cairns in line behind the sledges and building new ones as old ones disappeared, to march on an approximately straight line. On the evening of the 12th they reached latitude 81 degrees south, and built a large cairn for the depot. The stores left here were 3 weeks' rations for the ordinary sledging unit of three men. This quantity would provide 5 days' rations for 12 men, half for the use of the overland party, and half for the depot party on its return journey. The party moved southwards again on January 13th in bad weather. After a little consultation, we decided to get underway, wrote Joyce. Although the weather is thick, and snow is falling, it is worthwhile to make the effort. A little patience with the direction and the cairns, even if one has to put them up 200 yards apart, enables us to advance, and it seems that this weather will never break. We have cut up an old pair of trousers belonging to a Richards to place on the sides of the cairns, so as to make them more prominent. It was really surprising to find how we got on in spite of the snow and the pie crust surface. We did 5 miles 75 yards before lunch. The dogs are doing splendidly. I really don't know how we should manage if it were not for them. The distance for the day was 10 miles 720 yards, a splendid performance considering surface and weather. The weather cleared on the 14th, and the men were able to get bearings from the mountains to the westward. They advanced fairly rapidly during succeeding days, the daily distances being from 10 to 12 miles, and reached latitude 82 degrees south on the morning of January 18th. The depot here, like the depot at 81 degrees south, contained 5 days' provisions for 12 men. McIntosh was having trouble with the Primus lamp in his tent, and this made it inadvisable to divide the party again. It was decided, therefore, that all should proceed, and that the next and last depot should be placed on the base of Mount Hope, at the foot of the Beardmore Glacier, in latitude 83 degrees 30 seconds south. The party proceeded at once and advanced 5 miles beyond the depot before camping on the evening of the 18th. The sledge loads were now comparatively light, and on the 19th the party covered 13 miles 700 yards. A new trouble was developing, for Spencer Smith was suffering from swollen and painful legs, and was unable to do much pulling. Joyce wrote on the 21st that Smith was worse, and that McIntosh was showing signs of exhaustion. A mountain that he believed to be Mount Hope could be seen right ahead, over 30 miles away. Spencer Smith, who had struggled forward gamely and made no unnecessary complaints, started with the party the next morning and kept going until shortly before noon. Then he reported his inability to proceed, and McIntosh called a halt. Spencer Smith suggested that he should be left with provisions and a tent while the other members of the party pushed on to Mount Hope, and pluckily assured McIntosh that the rest would put him right and that he would be ready to march when they returned. The party agreed, after a brief consultation, to adopt this plan. McIntosh felt that the depot must be laid, and that delay would be dangerous. Spencer Smith was left with a tent, one sledge, and provisions, and told to expect the returning party in about a week. The tent was made as comfortable as possible inside, and food was placed within the sick man's reach. Spencer Smith bade his companions a cheery goodbye after lunch, and the party was 6 or 7 miles away before evening. 5 men had to squeeze into one tent that night, but with a minus temperature they did not object to being crowded. On January 23 a thick fog obscured all landmarks, and as bearings of the mountains were now necessary the party had to camp at 11 a.m., after traveling only 4 miles. The thick weather continued over the 24th, and the men did not move again until the morning of the 25th. They did 17¾ miles that day, and camped at 6 p.m. on the edge of the biggest ice pressure Joyce had ever seen. They were steering in towards the mountains and were encountering the tremendous congestion created by the flow of the Beardmore Glacier into the barrier ice. "We decided to keep the camp up," ran Joyce's account of the work done on January 26th. "Skipper, Richards, and myself roped ourselves together, I taking the lead, to try and find a course through this pressure. We came across very wide crevasses, went down several, came on top of a very high ridge, and such a scene. Imagine thousands of tons of ice churned up to a depth of about 300 feet. We took a couple of photographs, then carried on to the east. At last we found a passage through, and carried on through smaller crevasses to Mount Hope, or we hoped it was the mountain by that name. We can see a great glacier ahead which we take for the Beardmore, which this mountain is on, but the position on the chart seems wrong. It was not. East.south we nearly arrived at the ice foot when Richards saw something to the right, which turned out to be two of Captain Scott's sledges, upright, but three quarters buried in snow. Then we knew for certain this was the place we had struggled to get to. So we climbed the glacier on the slope and went up about 1¼ miles, and saw the great Beardmore Glacier stretching to the south. It is about 25 miles wide, a most wonderful sight. Then we returned to our camp, which we found to be 6 miles away. We left at 8 a.m. and arrived back at 3 p.m., a good morning's work. We then had lunch. About 4 p.m. we got underway and proceeded with the two sledges and camped about 7 o'clock. Wild, Hayward and myself then took the depot up the glacier, a fortnight's provisions. We left it lashed to a broken sledge and put up a large flag. I took 2 photographs of it. We did not arrive back until 10:30 p.m. It was rather a heavy pull-up. I was very pleased to see our work completed at last. Turned in 12 o'clock. The distance done during day 22 miles. The party remained in camp until 3:30 p.m. on the 27th, owing to a blizzard with heavy snow. Then they made a start in clearer weather and got through the crevassed area before camping at 7 p.m. Joyce was suffering from snow blindness. They were now homeward bound, with 365 miles to go. They covered 16½ miles on the 28th, with Joyce absolutely blind and hanging to the harness for guidance, but still pulling his whack. They reached Spencer Smith's camp the next afternoon and found him in his sleeping bag, quite unable to walk. Joyce's diary of this date contains a rather gloomy reference to the outlook, since he guessed that McIntosh also would be unable to make the homeward march. "The dogs are still keeping fit," he added. "If they will only last to 80 degrees south we shall then have enough food to take them in, and then if the ship is in I guarantee they will live in comfort the remainder of their lives." No march could be made on the 30th, since a blizzard was raging. The party made 8 miles on the 31st, with Spencer Smith on one of the sledges in his sleeping bag. The sufferer was quite helpless, and had to be lifted and carried about, but his courage did not fail him. His words were cheerful even when his physical suffering and weakness were most pronounced. The distance for February 1st was 13 miles. The next morning the party abandoned one sledge in order to lighten the load, and proceeded with a single sledge, Spencer Smith lying on top of the stores and gear. The distance for the day was 15½ miles. They picked up the 82 degrees south depot on February 3rd, and took 1 week's provisions, leaving 2 weeks' rations for the overland party. Joyce, Wild, Richards, and Hayward were feeling fit. McIntosh was lame and weak. Spencer Smith's condition was alarming. The party was being helped by strong southerly winds, and the distances covered were decidedly good. The sledge meter recorded 15 miles 1700 yards on February 4th, 17 miles 1400 yards on the 5th, 18 miles 1200 yards on the 6th, and 13 miles 1000 yards on the 7th, when the 81 degrees south depot was picked up at 10:30 a.m., and 1 week's stores taken, 2 weeks' rations being left. The march to the next depot, at 80 degrees south, was uneventful. The party made good marches in spite of bad surfaces and thick weather, and reached the depot late in the afternoon of February 12th. The supply of stores at this depot was ample, and the men took a fortnight's rations, calculated on a three-man basis, leaving nearly 4 weeks' rations. Spencer Smith seemed a little better, and all hands were cheered by the rapid advance. February 14th, 15th, and 16th were bad days, the soft surface allowing the men to sink to their knees at times. The dogs had a rough time, and the daily distances fell to about 8 miles. McIntosh's weakness was increasing. Then on the 18th, when the party was within 12 miles of the Bluff Depot, a furious blizzard made traveling impossible. This blizzard raged for 5 days. Rations were reduced on the second day, and the party went on half rations the third day. "Still blizzarding," wrote Joyce on the 20th. "Things are serious, what with our patient and provisions running short. Dog provisions are nearly out, and we have to have their rations. We are now on 1 cup of hooch among the three of us, with 1 biscuit and 6 lumps of sugar. The most serious of calamities is that our oil is running out. We have plenty of tea, but no fuel to cook it with." The men in McIntosh's tent were in no better plight. McIntosh himself was in a bad way. He was uncertain about his ability to resume the march, but was determined to try. "Still blizzarding," wrote Joyce again on the 21st. "We are lying in pools of water made by our bodies through staying in the same place for such a long time. I don't know what we shall do if this does not ease. It has been blowing continuously without a lull. The food for today was 1 cup of pemmican amongst three of us, 1 biscuit each, and 2 cups of tea among the three. The kerosene was exhausted, but Richards improvised a lamp by pouring some spirit, intended for priming the oil lamp, into a mug, lighting it, and holding another mug over it. It took half an hour to heat a mug of melted snow in this way. Same old thing, no ceasing of this blizzard," was Joyce's note 24 hours later. "Hardly any food left except tea and sugar. Richards, Hayward, and I, after a long talk, decided to get underway tomorrow in any case, or else we shall be sharing the fate of Captain Scott and his party. The other tent seems to be very quiet, but now and again we hear a burst of song from Wild, so they are in the land of the living. We gave the dogs the last of their food tonight, so we shall have to push, as a great deal depends on them." Further quotations from Joyce's diary tell their own story. February 23rd, Wednesday. "About 11 o'clock saw a break in the clouds and the sun showing. Decided to have the meal we kept for getting underway. Sang out to the skipper's party that we should shift as soon as we had a meal. I asked Wild, and found they had a bag of oatmeal, some Bovril cubes, 1 bag of chocolate, and 18 biscuits, so they are much better off than we are. After we had our meal we started to dig out our sledge, which we found right under. It took us 2 hours, and one would hardly credit how weak we were. 2 digs of the shovel and we were out of breath. This was caused through our lying up on practically no food. After getting sledge out we took it around to the skipper's tent on account of the heavy sastrugi, which was very high. Got underway about 2:20. Had to stop very often on account of sail, etc. About 3:20 the skipper, who had tied himself to the rear of the sledge, found it impossible to proceed. So after a consultation with Wild and party, decided to pitch their tent, leaving Wild to look after the skipper and Spencer Smith, and make the best of our way to the depot, which is anything up to 12 miles away. So we made them comfortable and left them about 3:40. I told Wild I should leave as much as possible and get back 26th or 27th, weather permitting, but just as we left them it came on to snow pretty hard, sun going in, and we found even with the 4 dogs we could not make more than 1/2 to 3/4 of a mile an hour. The surface is so bad that sometimes you go in up to your waist. Still in spite of all this we carried on until 6:35. Camped in a howling blizzard. I found my left foot badly frostbitten. Now after this march we came into our banquet, 1 cup of tea and 1/2 biscuit. Turned in at 9 o'clock. Situation does not look very cheerful. This is really the worst surface I had ever come across in all my journeys here. McIntosh had stayed on his feet as long as was humanly possible. The records of the outward journey show clearly that he was really unfit to continue beyond the 82 degrees south depot, and other members of the party would have liked him to have stayed with Spencer Smith at latitude 83 degrees south, but the responsibility for the work to be done was primarily his, and he would not give in. He had been suffering for several weeks from what he cheerfully called a strained leg, owing to scurvy. He marched for half an hour on the 23rd before breaking down, but had to be supported partly by Richards. Spencer Smith was sinking. Wild, who stayed in charge of the two invalids, was in fairly good condition. Joyce, Richards, and Hayward, who had undertaken the relief journey, were all showing symptoms of scurvy, though in varying degrees. Their legs were weak, their gums swollen. The decision that the invalids, with Wild, should stay in camp from February 24th, while Joyce's party pushed forward to Bluff Depot, was justified fully by the circumstances. Joyce, Richards, and Hayward had difficulty in reaching the depot with a nearly empty sledge. An attempt to make their journey with two helpless men might have involved the loss of the whole party. February 24th, Thursday, up at 4:30, had one cup of tea, half biscuit, underway after 7. Weather, snowing and blowing like yesterday. Richards, laying the cairns, had great trouble in getting the compass within 10 degrees on account of wind. During the forenoon had to stop every quarter of an hour on account of our breath. Every time the sledge struck a drift she stuck in, although only 200 pounds, and in spite of 3 men and 4 dogs we could only shift her with the 1-3 haul. I wonder if this weather will ever clear up. Camped in an exhausted condition about 12:10. Lunch, half cup of weak tea and quarter biscuit, which took over half an hour to make. Richards and Hayward went out of tent to prepare for getting underway, but the force of wind and snow drove them back. The force of wind is about 70 to 80 miles per hour. We decided to get the sleeping bags in, which took some considerable time. The worst of camping is the poor dogs and our weak condition, which means we have to get out of our wet sleeping bags and have another half cup of tea without working for it. With scrapings from dog tank it is a very scanty meal. This is the second day the dogs have been without food, and if we cannot soon pick up depot and save the dogs it will be almost impossible to drag our two invalids back the 100 miles which we have to go. The wind carried on with an abating fury until 7 o'clock, and then came a lull. We at once turned out, but found it snowing so thickly that it was impossible to proceed on account of our weakness. No chance must we miss. Turned in again. Wind sprang up again with heavy drift 8:30. In spite of everything my tent mates are very cheerful and look on the bright side of everything. After a talk we decided to await and turned in. It is really wonderful what dreams we have, especially of food. Trusting in Providence for fine weather tomorrow. February 25th, Friday. Turned out 4:45. Richards prepared our usual banquet, half cup of tea, quarter biscuit, which we relished. Underway at 7, carried on, halting every 10 minutes or quarter of an hour. Weather, snowing and blowing same as yesterday. We are in a very weak state, but we cannot give in. We often talk about poor Captain Scott and the blizzard that finished him and party. If we had stayed in our tent another day I don't think we should have got underway at all, and we would have shared the same fate. But if the worst comes we have made up our minds to carry on and die in harness. If anyone were to see us on trek they would be surprised, 3 men staggering on with 4 dogs, very weak. Practically empty sledge with fair wind and just crawling along, our clothes are all worn out, finiscoe and sleeping bags torn. Tent is our worst point, all torn in front, and we are afraid to camp on account of it, as it is too cold to mend it. We camped for our grand lunch at noon. After 5 hours struggling I think we did about 3 miles. After lunch sat in our tent talking over the situation. Decided to get underway again as soon as there is any clearance. Snowing and blowing. Force about 50 or 60 miles an hour. February 26th, Saturday. Richards went out 1:10 a.m. and found it clearing a bit, so we got underway as soon as possible, which was 2:10 a.m. about 2:35 Richards sighted depot, which seemed to be right on top of us. I suppose we can't know more than 3/4 of a mile from it. The dogs sighted it, which seemed to electrify them. They had new life and started to run. But we were so weak that we could not go more than 200 yards and then spell. I think another day would have seen us off. Arrived at depot 3:25, found it in a dilapidated condition, cases all about the place. I don't suppose there has ever been a weaker party arrive at any depot, either north or south. After a hard struggle got our tent up and made camp, then gave the dogs a good feed of pemmican. If ever dogs saved the lives of anyone, they have saved ours. Let us hope they will continue in good health, so that we can get out to our comrades. I started on our cooking. Not one of us had any appetite, although we were in the land of plenty, as we call this depot, plenty of biscuit, etc., but we could not eat. I think it is the reaction, not only in arriving here, but also finding no news of the ship, which was arranged before we left. We all think there has been a calamity there. Let us hope for the best. We decided to have rolled oats and milk for a start, which went down very well, and then a cup of tea. How cheery the Primus sounds. It seems like coming out of a thick London fog into a drawing room. After a consultation, we decided to have a meal of pemmican in 4 hours, and so on, until our weakness was gone. Later, still the same weather. We shall get underway and make a forced march back as soon as possible. I think we shall get stronger traveling and feeding well. Later, weather will not permit us to travel yet. Mended our torn tent with food bags. This took 4 hours. Feeding the dogs every 4 hours, and Richards and Hayward built up depot. It is really surprising to find it takes 2 men to a lift of 50 pounds. Case, it only shows our weakness. Weather still the same, force of wind at times about 70 to 90 miles an hour. Really surprising how this can keep on so longitude. February 27th, Sunday. Wind continued with fury the whole night. Expecting every minute to have the tent blown off us. Up 5 o'clock, found it so thick one could not get out of the tent. We are still very weak, but think we can do the 12 miles to our comrades in one long march. If only it would clear up for just one day, we would not mind. This is the longest continuous blizzard I had ever been in. We had not had a traveling day for 11 days, and the amount of snow that has fallen is astonishing. Later, had a meal 10:30 and decided to get underway in spite of the wind and snow. Underway 12 o'clock. We had 3 weeks food on sledge, about 160 pounds, and 1 week's dog food, 50 pounds. The whole weight, all told, about 600 pounds, and also taking an extra sledge to bring back Captain McIntosh. To our surprise, we could not shift the sledges. After half an hour we got about 10 yards. We turned the sledge up and scraped runners. It went a little better after. I am afraid our weakness is much more than we think. Hayward is in rather a bad way about his knees, which are giving him trouble and are very painful. We will give him a good massage when we camp. The dogs have lost all heart in pulling. They seem to think that going south again is no good to them. They seem to just jog along, and one cannot do more. I don't suppose our pace is more than one half or three quarters of a mile per hour. The surface is rotten, snow up to one's knees, and what with wind and drift, a very bad outlook. Lunched about 4:30. Carried on until 11:20, when we camped. It was very dark making our dinner, but soon got through the process. Then Richard spent an hour or so in rubbing Hayward with Mephilod spirits, which did him a world of good. If he were to break up now, I should not know what to do. Turned in about 1:30. It is now calm, but overcast with light falling snow. February 28th, Monday. Up at 6 o'clock, can just see a little skyline. Underway at 9 o'clock. The reason of delay, Hantum and Finniscoe, which are in a very dilapidated condition. I got my feet badly frostbitten yesterday. About 11 o'clock came onto snow, everything overcast. We ought to reach our poor boys in 3 or 4 hours, but fate wills otherwise, as it came on again to blizzard force about 11:45. Camped at noon. I think the party must be within a very short distance, but we cannot go on as we might pass them, and as we have not got any position to go on except compass. Later, kept on blizzarding all afternoon and night. February 29th, Tuesday. Up at 5 o'clock, still very thick. It cleared up a little to the south about 8 o'clock, when Richard sighted something black to the north of us, but could not see properly what it was. After looking round, sighted camp to the south. So we got underway as soon as possible. Got up to the camp about 12:45, when Wild came out to meet us. We gave him a cheer, as we fully expected to find all down. He said he had taken a little exercise every day, they had not any food left. The skipper then came out of the tent, very weak and as much as he could do to a walk. He said, "I want to thank you for saving our lives." I told Wild to go and give them a feed and not to eat too much at first in case of reaction, as I am going to get underway as soon as they have had a feed. So we had lunch, and the skipper went ahead to get some exercise, and after an hour's digging out got everything ready for leaving. When we lifted Smith, we found he was in a great hole which he had melted through. This party had been in one camp for 12 days. We got underway and picked the skipper up. He had fallen down, too weak to walk. We put him on the sledge we had brought out, and we camped about 8 o'clock. I think we did about 3 miles, rather good with two men on the sledges and Hayward in a very bad way. I don't think there has been a party, either north or south, in such straits, 3 men down and 3 of us very weak, but the dogs seem to have new life since we turned north. I think they realize they are homeward bound. I am glad we kept them, even when we were starving. I knew they would have to come in at the finish. We have now to look forward to southerly winds for help, which I think we shall get at this time of year. Let us hope the temperature will keep up, as our sleeping bags are wet through and worn out, and all our clothes full of holes, and Finniscoe in a dilapidated condition. In fact, one would not be out on a cold day in civilization with the rotten clothes we had on. Turned in 11 o'clock, wet through, but in a better frame of mind. Hope to try and reach the depot tomorrow, even if we have to march overtime. March 1st, Wednesday. Turned out usual time, a good south wind, but, worse luck, heavy drift. Set sail, put the skipper on rear sledge. The temperature has gone down and it is very cold. Bluff in sight. We are making good progress, doing a good mileage before lunch. After lunch a little stronger wind. Hayward still hanging on to sledge, skipper fell off twice. Reached depot 5:45. When camping found we had dropped our tent poles, so Richards went back a little way and spotted them through the binoculars about half a mile off, and brought them back. Hayward and I were very cold by that time, the drift very bad. Moral, see everything properly secured. We soon had our tent up, cooked our dinner in the dark, and turned in about 10 o'clock. March 2nd, Thursday. Up as usual. Strong southwest wind with heavy drift. Took 2 weeks' provisions from the depot. I think that will last us through, as there is another depot about 50 miles north from here. I am taking the outside course on account of the crevasses, and one cannot take too many chances with two men on sledges and one crippled. Underway about 10 o'clock, lunched noon in a heavy drift, took an hour to get the tents up, etc., the wind being so heavy. Found sledges buried under snow after lunch, took some time to get underway. Wind and drift very heavy, set half sail on the first sledge and underway about 3:30. The going is perfect, sometimes sledges overtaking us. Carried on until 8 o'clock, doing an excellent journey for the day, distance about 11 or 12 miles. Gives one a bit of heart to carry on like this, only hope we can do this all the way. Had to cook our meals in the dark, but still we did not mind. Turned in about 11 o'clock, pleased with ourselves, although we were wet through with snow, as it got through all the holes in our clothes, and the sleeping bags are worse than awful. March 3rd, Friday. Up the usual time. It has been blowing a raging blizzard all night. Found to our disgust utterly impossible to carry on. Another few hours of agony in these rotten bags. Later. Blizzard much heavier. Amused myself mending Finniscoe and Burberry's, mitts and socks. Had the primus while this operation was in force. Hoping for a fine day tomorrow. March 4th, Saturday. Up 5:20. Still blizzarding, but have decided to get underway as we will have to try and travel through everything, as Hayward is getting worse, and one doesn't know who is the next. No mistake, it is scurvy, and the only possible cure is fresh food. I sincerely hope the ship is in, if not we shall get over the hills by Castle Rock, which is rather difficult and will delay another couple of days. Smith is still cheerful, he has hardly moved for weeks and he has to have everything done for him. Got underway 9:35. It took some 2 hours to dig out dogs and sledges, as they were completely buried. It is the same every morning now. Set sail, going along pretty fair. Hayward gets on sledge now and again. Lunched as usual, sledges got buried again at lunchtime. It takes some time to camp now, and in this drift it is awful. In the afternoon wind eased a bit and drift went down. Found it very hard pulling with the third man on sledge, as Hayward has been on all the afternoon. Wind veered 2 points to south, so we had a fair wind. An hour before we camped air booze and terror showing up, a welcome sight. Only hope wind will continue. Drift is worst thing to contend with as it gets into our clothes, which are wet through now. Camped 8 o'clock. Cooked in the dark, and turned in our wet sleeping bags about 10 o'clock. distance about 8 or 9 miles. March 5th, Sunday. Turned out 6:15. Overslept a little, very tired after yesterday. Sun shining brightly and no wind. It seemed strange last night, no flapping of tent in one's ears. About 8:30 came on to drift again. Underway 9:20, both sails set. Sledge going hard, especially in soft places. If Hayward had not broken down, we should not feel the weight so much. Lunch 12:45. Underway at 3. Wind and drift very heavy. A good job it is blowing some, or else we should have to a relay. All land obscured. Distance about 10 or 11 miles. A very good performance. Camp 7:10 in the dark. Patients not in the best of trim. I hope to get in, bar accidents, in 4 days. March 6th, Monday. Underway 9:20. Picked up 32-mile depot 11 o'clock. Going with a fair wind in the forenoon, which eased somewhat after lunch and so caused very heavy work in pulling. It seems to me we shall have to depot someone if the wind eases at all. Distance during day about 8 miles. March 7th, Tuesday. Underway 9 o'clock. Although we turn out at 5, it seems a long time to get underway. There is double as much work to do now with our invalids. This is the calmest day we have had for weeks. The sun is shining and all land in sight. It is very hard going. Had a little breeze about 11 o'clock, set sail, but work still very, very heavy. Hayward and Skipper going on ahead with sticks, very slow pace, but it will boat them up and do them good. If one could only get some fresh food. About 11 o'clock decided to camp and overhaul sledges and depot all gear except what is actually required. Underway again at 2, but surface being so sticky did not make any difference. After a consultation the skipper decided to stay behind in a tent with 3 weeks' provisions whilst we pushed on with Smith and Hayward. It seems hard, only about 30 miles away, and yet cannot get any assistance. Our gear is absolutely rotten, no sleep last night, shivering all night in wet bags. I wonder what will be the outcome of it all after our struggle. Trust in Providence. Distance about 3.5 miles. March 8th, Wednesday. Underway 9:20. Wished the skipper goodbye, took Smith and Hayward on. Had a fair wind, going pretty good. Hope to arrive in Hut Point in 4 days. Lunched at Mumberto Depot. Distance about 4.5 miles. Underway as usual after lunch, had wind, going very heavy. Carried on until 6:30. Distance about 8 or 9 miles. March 9th, Thursday. Had a very bad night, cold intense. Temperature down to negative 29 degrees all night. At 4 a.m. Spencer Smith called out that he was feeling queer. Wild spoke to him. Then at 5:45 Richard suddenly said, I think he has gone. Poor Smith, for 40 days in pain he had been dragged on the sledge, but never grumbled or complained. He had a strenuous time in his wet bag, and the jolting of the sledge on a very weak heart was not too good for him. Sometimes when we lifted him on the sledge he would nearly faint, but during the whole time he never complained. Wild looked after him from the start. We buried him in his bag at 9 o'clock at the following position, Arab, 184 degrees, odds, hill 149 degrees. We made a cross of bamboos, and built a mound and cairn, with particulars. After that got underway with Hayward on sledge. Found going very hard, as we had a northerly wind in our faces, with a temperature below 20 degrees. What with frost bites, etc., we are all suffering. Even the dogs seem like giving in, they do not seem to take any interest in their work. We have been out much too long, and nothing ahead to cheer us up but a cold, cheerless hut. We did about 2.5 miles in the forenoon, Hayward toddling ahead every time we had a spell. During lunch the wind veered to the south with drift, just right to set sail. We carried on with Hayward on sledge and camped in the dark about 8 o'clock. Turned in at 10, weary, worn, and sad. Hoping to reach depot tomorrow. March 10th, Friday. Turned out as usual. Beam wind, going pretty fair, very cold. Came into very soft snow about 3, arrived at safety camp 5 o'clock. Got to edge of ice barrier, found passage over in a bay full of seals. Dogs got very excited, had a job to keep them away. By the glass it looked clear right to Cape Hermitage, which is 4.5 miles away. Arrived there 8 o'clock, very dark and bad light. Found open water. Turned to climb slopes against a strong northeasterly breeze with drift. Found a place about a mile away, but we were so done up that it took until 11:30 to get gear up. The slope was about 150 yards up, and every 3 paces we had to stop and get breath. eventually camped and turned in about 2 o'clock. I think this is the worst day I ever spent. What with the disappointment of not getting round the point, and the long day and the thought of getting haywired over the slopes, it is not very entertaining for sleep. March 11th, Saturday. Up at 7 o'clock, took binoculars and went over the slope to a look around the cape. To my surprise found the open water and pack at the cape only extended for about a mile. Came down and gave the boys the good news. I think it would take another 2 hard days to get over the hills, and we are too weak to do much of that, as I am afraid of another collapsing. Richards and Wild climbed up to a look at the back of the bay and found the ice secure. Got underway 10:30, went round the cape and found ice, very slushy, but continued on. No turning now, got into hard ice shortly after, eventually arriving at Hut Point about 3 o'clock. It seems strange after our adventures to arrive back at the old hut. This place has been standing since we built it in 1901, and has been the starting point of a few expeditions since. When we were coming down the bay I could fancy the discovery there when Scott arrived from his farthest south in 1902, the ship decorated rainbow fashion, and Lieutenant Armitage giving out the news that Captain Scott had got to 82 degrees 17 seconds south, we went wild that day. But now our homecoming is quite different. Hut half full of snow through a window being left open and drift getting in, but we soon got it shipshape and hayward in. I had the fire going and plenty of vegetables on, as there was a fair supply of dried vegetables. Then after we had had a feed, Richards and Wild went down the bay and killed a couple of seals. I gave a good menu of seal meat at night, and we turned in about 11 o'clock, full, too full, in fact. As there is no news here of the ship, and we cannot see her, we surmise she has gone down with all hands. I cannot see there is any chance of her being afloat or she would be here. I don't know how the skipper will take it. March 12th, Sunday. Heard groans proceeding from the sleeping bags all night, all hands suffering from overeating. Hayward not very well. Turned out 8 o'clock. Good breakfast, porridge, seal, vegetables, and coffee, more like a banquet to us. After breakfast Richards and Wild killed a couple of seals whilst I made the hut a bit comfy. Hayward can hardly move. All of us in a very bad state, but we must keep up exercise. My ankles and knees badly swollen, gums prominent. Wild, very black around joints, and gums very black. Richards about the best off. After digging hut out I prepared food which I think will keep the scurvy down. The dogs have lost their lassitude and are quite frisky, except Oscar, who is suffering from overfeeding. After a strenuous day's work turned in 10 o'clock. March 13th, Monday. Turned out 7 o'clock. Carried on much the same as yesterday, bringing in sealed blubber and meat. Preparing for departure tomorrow, hope everyone will be alright. Made new dog harness and prepared sledges. In afternoon cooked sufficient seal meat for our journey out and back, and same for dogs. Turned in 10 o'clock, feeling much better. March 14th, Tuesday. A beautiful day. Underway after lunch. One would think, looking at our party, that we were the most ragged lot one could meet in a day's march, all our clothes past mending, our faces as black as niggers, a sort of crowd one would run away from. Going pretty good. As soon as we rounded Cape Armitage a dead head wind with a temperature of negative 18 degrees Fahrenheit, so we are not in for a pleasant time. Arrived at safety camp 6 o'clock, turned in 8:30, after getting everything ready. March 15th, Wednesday. Underway as usual. Nice calm day. Had a very cold night, temperature going down to negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit going along at a rattling good rate, in spite of our swollen limbs we did about 15 miles. Very cold when we camped, temperature negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit turned in 9 o'clock. March 16th, Thursday. Up before the sun, 4:45 a.m. had a very cold night, not much sleep. Underway early. Going good. Passed Smith's Grave 10:45 a.m. and had lunch at depot. Saw Skipper's camp just after, and looking through glass found him outside tent, much to the joy of all hands, as we expected him to be down. Picked him up 4:15 p.m. broke the news of Smith's death and no ship. I gave him the date of the 17th to a lookout for our returning, so he had a surprise. We struck his camp and went north for about a mile and camped. We gave the skipper a banquet of seal, vegetables, and blackcurrant jam, the feed of his life. He seems in a bad way. I hope to get him in 3 days, and I think fresh food will improve him. We turned in 8 o'clock. Distance done during day 16 miles. March 17th, Friday. Up at 5 o'clock. Underway 8 a.m. Skipper feeling much better after feeding him up. Lunched a few yards past Smith's grave. Had a good afternoon, going fair. Distance about 16 miles. Very cold night, temperature negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit. Walk with wet bags and clothes, rotten. March 18th, Saturday. Turned out 5 o'clock. Had rather a cold night. Temperature negative 29 degrees Fahrenheit. Surface very good. The skipper walked for a little way, which did him good. Lunched as usual. Pace good. After lunch going good. Arrived at safety camp for 10 p.m. to our delight found the sea ice in the same condition and arrived at hut point at 7 o'clock. Found Hayward still about same. Set to, made a good dinner, and all hands seem in the best of spirits. Now we had arrived and got the party in, it remains to themselves to get better. Plenty of exercise and fresh food ought to do miracles. We had been out 160 days, and done a distance of 1561 miles, a good record. I think the irony of fate was poor Smith going under a day before we got in. I think we shall all soon be well. Turned in 10:30 p.m. Before turning in, skipper shook us by the hand with great emotion, thanking us for saving his life. Richards, summarizing the work of the parties, says that the journeys made between September 1st and March 18th, a period of 160 days, totaled 1561 miles. The main journey, from Hut Point to Mount Hope and return, was 830 miles. The equipment, he adds, was old at the commencement of the season, and this told severely at the later stages of the journey. Three Premier's lamps gave out on the journeys, and the old tent brought back by one of the last parties showed rents several feet in length. This hampered the traveling in the long blizzards. Finiskoe were also in pieces at the end, and time had frequently to be lost through repairs to clothing becoming imperative. This account would not be complete without some mention of the unselfish service rendered by Wild to his two ill tent mates. From the time he remained behind at the long blizzard till the death of Spencer Smith, he had two helpless men to attend to, and despite his own condition he was ever ready, night or day, to minister to their wants. This, in a temperature of negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit at times, was no light task. Without the aid of four faithful friends, Oscar, Con, Dunner, and Tozer, the party could never have arrived back. These dogs from November 5th accompanied the sledging parties, and, although the pace was often very slow, they adapted themselves well to it. Their endurance was fine. For three whole days at one time they had not a scrap of food, and this after a period on short rations. Though they were feeble towards the end of the trip, their condition usually was good, and those who returned with them will ever remember the remarkable service they rendered. The first indication of anything wrong with the general health of the party occurred at about latitude 82 degrees 30 seconds south, when Spencer Smith complained of stiffness in the legs and discoloration. He attributed this to holes in his windproof clothing. At latitude 83 degrees south, when he gave way, it was thought that the rest would do him good. About the end of January, Captain McIntosh showed very serious signs of lameness. At this time his party had been absent from Hut Point, and consequently from fresh food, about 3 months. On the journey back, Spencer Smith gradually became weaker, and for some time before the end was in a very weak condition indeed. Captain McIntosh, by great efforts, managed to keep his feet until the long blizzard was encountered. Here it was that Hayward was first found to be affected with the scurvy, his knees being stiff. In his case the disease took him off his feet very suddenly, apparently causing the muscles of his legs to contract till they could be straightened hardly more than a right angle. He had slight touches in the joints of the arms. In the cases of Joyce, Wild, and Richards, joints became stiff and black in the rear, but general weakness was the worst symptom experienced. Captain McIntosh's legs looked the worst in the party. The five men who were now at Hut Point found quickly that some of the winter months must be spent there. They had no news of the ship, and were justified in assuming that she had not returned to the Sound, since if she had, some message would have been awaiting them at Hut Point, if not farther south. The sea ice had broken and gone north within a mile of the point, and the party must wait until the new ice became firm as far as Cape Evans. Plenty of seal meat was available, as well as dried vegetables, and the fresh food improved the condition of the patients very rapidly. Richards massaged the swollen joints and found that this treatment helped a good deal. Before the end of March, McIntosh and Hayward, the worst sufferers, were able to take exercise. By the second week of April, McIntosh was free of pain, though the backs of his legs were still discolored. A tally of the stores at the hut showed that on a reasonable allowance the supply would last till the middle of June. Richards and Wild killed many seals, so that there was no scarcity of meat and blubber. A few penguins were also secured. The sole means of cooking food and heating the hut was an improvised stove of brick, covered with two sheets of iron. This had been used by the former expedition. The stove emitted dense smoke and often made the hut very uncomfortable, while at the same time it covered the men and all their gear with clinging and penetrating soot. Cleanliness was out of the question, and this increased the desire of the men to get across to Cape Evans. During April the sea froze in calm weather, but winds took the ice out again. On April 23 Joyce walked 4 miles to the north, partly on young ice 2 inches thick, and he thought then that the party might be able to reach Cape Evans within a few days. But a prolonged blizzard took the ice out right up to the point, so that the open water extended at the end of April right up to the foot of Vinnie's Hill. Then came a spell of calm weather, and during the first week of May the sea ice formed rapidly. The men made several short trips over it to the north. The sun had disappeared below the horizon in the middle of April, and would not appear again for over 4 months. The disaster that followed is described by both Richards and Joyce. "And now a most regrettable incident occurred," wrote Richards. "On the morning of May 8th, before breakfast, Captain McIntosh asked Joyce what he thought of his going to Cape Evans with Hayward. Captain McIntosh considered the ice quite safe, and the fine morning no doubt tempted him to exchange the quarters at the hut for the greater comfort and better food at Cape Evans. McIntosh naturally would be anxious to know if the men at Cape Evans were well and had any news of the ship. He was strongly urged at the time not to take the risk, as it was pointed out that the ice, although firm, was very young, and that a blizzard was almost sure to take part of it out to sea. However, at about 1 p.m., with the weather apparently changing for the worse, McIntosh and Hayward left, after promising to turn back if the weather grew worse. The last sight the watching party on the hill gained of them was when they were about a mile away, close to the shore, but apparently making straight for Cape Evans. At 3 p.m. a moderate blizzard was raging, which later increased in fury, and the party in the hut had many misgivings for the safety of the absent men. On May 10th, the first day possible, the 3 men left behind walked over new ice to the north to try and discover some trace as to the fate of the others. The footmarks were seen clearly enough raised up on the ice, and the track was followed for about 2 miles in a direction leading to Cape Evans. Here they ended abruptly, and in the dim light a wide stretch of water, very lightly covered with ice, was seen as far as the eye could reach. It was at once evident that part of the ice over which they had traveled had gone out to sea. The whole party had intended, if the weather had held good, to have attempted the passage across with the full moon about May 16th. On the date on which McIntosh and Hayward left, it was impossible that a sledge should travel the distance over the sea ice owing to the sticky nature of the surface. Hence their decision to go alone and leave the others to follow with the sledge and equipment when the surface should improve. That they had actually been lost was learned only on July 15th, on which date the party from Hut Point arrived at Cape Evans. The entry in Joyce's diary shows that he had very strong forebodings of disaster when McIntosh and Hayward left. He warned them not to go, as the ice was still thin and the weather was uncertain. McIntosh seems to have believed that he and Hayward, traveling light, could get across to Cape Evans quickly before the weather broke, and if the blizzard had come 2 or 3 hours later they probably would have been safe. The 2 men carried no sleeping bags and only a small meal of chocolate and seal meat. The weather during June was persistently bad. No move had been possible on May 16th, the sea ice being out, and Joyce decided to await until the next full moon. When this came the weather was boisterous, and so it was not until the full moon of July that the journey to Cape Evans was made. During June and July seals got very scarce, and the supply of blubber ran short. Meals consisted of little but seal meat and porridge. The small stock of salt was exhausted, but the men procured 2.5 pounds by boiling down snow taken from the bottom layer next to the sea ice. The dogs recovered condition rapidly and did some hunting on their own account among the seals. The party started for Cape Evans on July 15th. They had expected to take advantage of the full moon, but by a strange chance they had chosen the period of an eclipse, and the moon was shadowed most of the time they were crossing the sea ice. The ice was firm, and the 3 men reached Cape Evans without difficulty. They found Stevens, Cope, Days, and Jack at the Cape Evans hut, and learned that nothing had been seen of Captain McIntosh and Hayward. The conclusion that these men had perished was accepted reluctantly. The party at the base consisted now of Stevens, Cope, Joyce, Richards, Days, Wild, and Jack. The men settled down now to await for relief. When opportunity offered, Joyce led search parties to look for the bodies or any trace of the missing men, and he subsequently handed me the following report. I beg to report that the following steps were taken to try and discover the bodies of Captain McIntosh and Mr. Hayward. After our party's return to the hut at Cape Evans, July 15, 1916, it was learned that Captain McIntosh and Mr. Hayward had not arrived, and, being aware of the conditions under which they were last seen, all the members of the wintering party were absolutely convinced that these two men were totally lost and dead, that they could not have lived for more than a few hours at the outside in the blizzard that they had encountered, they being entirely unprovided with equipment of any sort. There was the barest chance that after the return of the sun some trace of their bodies might be found, so during the spring, that is, August and September 1916, and in the summer, December and January 1916-17, the following searches were carried out. One, Wild and I thoroughly searched Inaccessible Island at the end of August 1916. Two, various parties in September searched along the shore to the vicinity of Turk's Head. Three, in company with Masros, Wild and Days I started from Hut Point, December 31, 1916, at 8 a.m., and a course was steered inshore as close as possible to the cliffs in order to search for any possible means of ascent. At a distance of half a mile from Hut Point we passed a snow slope which I had already ascended in June 1916. 3.5 miles farther on was another snow slope, which ended in Blue Ice Glacier Slope, which we found impossible to climb, snow slope being formed by heavy winter snowfall. These were the only two places accessible. Distance on this day, 10 miles 17.10 yards covered. On January 1st search was continued round the south side of Glacier Tongue from the base towards the seaward end. There was much heavy pressure, it was impossible to reach the summit owing to the wide crack. Distance covered 4 miles 100 yards. On January 2nd thick weather caused party to a layup. On 3rd, glacier was further examined, and several slopes formed by snow led to top of glacier, but crevasses between slope and the tongue prevented crossing. The party then proceeded round the tongue to Tent Island, which was also searched, a complete tour of the island being made. It was decided to make for Cape Evans, as thick weather was approaching. We arrived at 8 p.m. distance 8 miles 490 yards. I remain, etc., Ernest East Joyce East, to Sir Ernest Shackleton, CDO, Commander, I.T.A. East. In September Richards was forced to a layup at the hut owing to a strained heart, due presumably to stress of work on the sledging journeys. Early in October a party consisting of Joyce, Days, and Wild spent several days at Cape Royds, where they skinned specimens. They sledged stores back to Cape Evans in case it should be found necessary to remain there over another winter. In September, Joyce, Days, and Wild went out to Spencer Smith's grave with a wooden cross, which they erected firmly. Relief arrived on January 10, 1917, but it is necessary now to turn back to the events of May 1915, when the Aurora was driven from her moorings off Cape Evans.